Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? For Christmas and New Year, there are going to be replays of previous really popular episodes. So even if you've heard them before, have another re-listen and enjoy. And I will see you back in 2024. Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I'm just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. So I'm going to start today with my occasional series, where I share my success of the week and my weird dilemma of the week. The success of the week is to remind me that I'm not doing a terrible job and hopefully to motivate you out there as well. The weird dilemma of the week is just a way for me to get out the strange and bizarre thought processes I have as somebody who hoards. So my success of the week, as I record, it is early December. And so it's Christmas shopping time. And on the one hand, I tend to think, great, I get to indulge in some shopping, but not have stuff in my house as a result. It feels like a win-win. But the danger, of course, is that when you're shopping for other people, you add a few hundred things for yourself as well. And so I've been doing most of my shopping online. And something I find really helpful for people who I'm not going to see over the Christmas period is to get their gifts sent directly to them. That means that I can't lose them. It means I can't keep them or I can't also just add something to the cart for myself because it's not coming via my house. So that's been working. But for the people I am going to be seeing over Christmas, things are coming to my house. So potential danger zone. My success of the week is that of all the Christmas shopping I've been doing from numerous online shops for numerous people, I only added one thing to one cart for myself. And I think that's pretty good going. So I'm quite pleased about that. So that is my success of the week. My weird dilemma of the week is the thing I got for myself was some note cards. I like to write letters to people once in a while. I think it's really nice to receive a handwritten letter, and so I like to send them once in a while. And so there were some note cards in a sale, and I got them. And they arrived, and they are very pretty, and I like them a lot. But it turns out that they are, once you've sent them, the recipient is supposed to, I don't know how to describe it, they're plantable. You can plant these note cards because they have seeds like embedded in the paper. So on the back of the note paper is instructions for how to kind of tear up the note card and soak it in water and then plant it in your garden. And thus comes my dilemma, because if I write somebody a letter, I don't want that letter to contain instructions to then tear it up, soak it and plant it. I kind of want them to keep it. And I'm normally really clear about not wanting or expecting other people to keep anything, whether I give it to them or in any circumstances. And yet there's something about handwriting a letter that feels a bit more personal than that. And I feel really torn. What I'm thinking I might do is, rather than use them to write letters on, I might use them as birthday cards, because I feel fine about somebody receiving a birthday card from me and keeping it for a week or two and then tearing it up and soaking it and planting it. That feels all right. Writing a full letter on it, though, just feels wrong. Is that weird? Tell me. Contact me on social media and let me know. It feels weird, but you know. But you know, some beautiful flowers can result from these cards, and that's a lovely thing. But not when I've written a letter on them. So today I am going to talk about where to start with dehoarding. It is something that comes up a lot. A hoard is by its nature overwhelming, and by the nature of hoarding disorder, we aren't necessarily people who can process overwhelm very well. And then I've joined Mastodon recently, which is an alternative social media site. I joined when lots of people did, when it looked like Twitter might fall over, and Twitter may still fall over. So I am on Mastodon now as well. I'm not planning to leave Twitter at this point, but it's good to have a backup. I am also on Facebook and TikTok and YouTube and Reddit. All the links are at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. So if you're also exploring Mastodon, or indeed if you've been on there for ages, find me. I know my username is at that hoarder, but I can't remember if I'm at mastodon.social, mastodon.online, one or the other. It's probably easier to find the link on my website. But anyway, somebody got in touch on Mastodon and asked me, where do I start? Like, I just got no idea. And I thought it was worth an episode of its own, because it's a huge question. And I wish this could be a really short episode where I tell you the precise place to start in your home. I wish I could say the place to start is the cupboard under the stairs, or the place to start is your bed, but there isn't, I'm afraid, a one-size-fits-all solution. On a practical level, our homes are different and our hoards are different. you know, you might not have stairs. So if I said the definitive place to start is the cupboard under your stairs, then it's already irrelevant. It wouldn't work if you are a hoarder, but your bed is clear. That would be also irrelevant. And also, sometimes where to start isn't a physical spot in your house. It's a mentality, or it's a mindset, or it's a different type of taking action. So I'm going to look at some of the potential places to start and give you some ideas so you can go from there. So first of all, two places not to start. Don't start by buying a load of supplies. Trust me on this. I have lost count of the number of times I have been convinced that the way to succeed is to buy a particular kind of plastic box or a particular kind of shelving. And if I could just get that right, then everything else would flow. And it's not what you need. It's not what you need now. It just adds clutter to your house. But also, you don't know what you need in the long run, because at the end of the very long process of de-hoarding, you don't know at this stage what you'll need then to store at all. So you need rubbish bags. That's about it. And the other place not to start is by contemplating it for weeks and weeks and weeks before taking any action. It's tempting, but you only start by starting, really. So something that a lot of people find helpful to get themselves started is to put some music on, put an audiobook on. Some of you, I hear quite regularly, you put this podcast on to de-hoard, which is great, whether that's a new episode or an episode you've heard before. Some people find it helpful to set a timer. It feels less overwhelming if something's going to beep in 20 minutes or 45 minutes or whenever you set it for. And you want a bag or three bags or boxes. One is for things you're going to keep, one is for things you're going to throw away, and one is for things you're going to donate or sell. Don't get too tied up in the idea of selling everything. That's for another episode. But yeah, that's basically what you need to start. Rubbish bags and somewhere to put things you're going to keep, you're going to throw, and you're going to donate. It's also important to manage your expectations when you're starting. You might not make a dramatic difference today or even this week. That doesn't make it not worth doing. It just means that this is a marathon, not a sprint, which I imagine you already know. But don't set your expectations too high if that might lead to you getting disheartened and giving up, because that's no good. A website I found called Balance Through Simplicity, that I will link to in the show notes, put it really nicely. It says, decluttering is largely to do with confidence. Confidence that you're doing something difficult right now, but for long-term gain. Confidence that you can make real and positive change, even if it feels tough. Confidence that the decisions you're making are the right decisions for you. So now, where physically to start? I think all of us have to have a focus around safety. If your hoard makes it difficult to get in and out of your home in particular, you should probably start with clearing that so that you can get out in an emergency. And so that if people need to come in to get you in an emergency, like firefighters or ambulance crew, they can do so. If that is a potential safety issue in your home, I would say that's a good place to start. Another potential safety issue is often around the kitchen. Make sure that, maybe start with the cooker if there's a lot of clutter around the cooker or other electrical items, especially ones that heat up. Another idea for where to start is what's bothering you the most. It will give you motivation. If you think, I hate that particular pile because it smells bad, or I hate that particular pile because, you know, whatever reason, whatever's bothering you, that will help you take action if it's already annoying you. it's important to not set out to achieve perfection. You're not trying to achieve perfection. Well, you might be trying to, but it's counterproductive. I've done a whole episode on perfectionism with Dr. Jan Eppingstall that I will link to in the show notes. But rather than thinking about the bigger picture, which is overwhelming and confusing and scary, focus on whichever task you've put in front of you. It's easy to look at the entirety of a house or a flat or wherever you live and think, this is too much, I can't do it. But if the task in front of you is one pile of clothes and you stay focused on that one pile of clothes, you are much more likely to be able to keep going. Another place to start, and one that I often start with, is eliminating the obvious trash, the obvious rubbish. Now, this is subjective, especially for hoarders. There are things that other people would consider trash that you don't. I'm not talking about those things in this instance. You will have to come to those things at some point. But in terms of starting, the things that you view as trash are a good place to start. So for me, if food is out of date, it goes. There's no discussion there. There's no debate there. It is not something I want to eat if it's out of date. And so often that's quite an easy place to start. Similarly, I have a bit of a cherry Pepsi Max habit. It's delicious. And so like empty cans of Pepsi Max, that's easy for me. I don't see any value in them. I do see them as trash. If there's some of those, you know, hanging around, they're easy to get rid of. And, you know, for other people, an empty cherry Pepsi Max can might look like a potential artwork. In that case, don't start with your cherry Pepsi Max cans. How many times can I say cherry Pepsi Max? If they want to sponsor me, they're more than welcome. And for you, it might be something completely different. But it's an easier place to start because you're not having to make massive decisions. If I can look at a tin of soup and see that it went out of date in February, I don't have to make a decision. That's a rule in my head that I don't have any debate with. It's out of date, it goes. If it's an empty can, I won't say it again, of pop, let's go with that, it goes. Something else that somebody else might consider to be trash, I might not. But for me, they're easy things, and starting easy really, really helps. Sure, there will be more difficult decisions down the line, but you'll have strengthened your de-hoarding muscle a bit by then. I did an episode about the fear ladder, which I will also link to in the show notes, but it's about the idea that you can kind of list from 1 to 10 types of items and how easy you would find it to get rid of them. And for those things that feel very easy, you might put, you know, you would put at one end of the ladder at the bottom, and the things you would find the hardest, which might be nostalgic letters, it might be photos, anything like that, you would put at the top of the ladder. And the idea is that you start with the easiest and work your way up, because it does get easier the more you do it. So that helps. You grow in confidence the more you do it. So that helps. You're more familiar with getting things out of the house. It all helps. So by the time you get to the harder things on your fear ladder, you've had that practice and that confidence, and you're feeling better about the idea that you can make good decisions. It might be that for you, there are entire rooms that feel easier and entire rooms that feel more difficult. Again, start with the easier rooms and then pick the easier stuff in the easier rooms. Really, don't make starting difficult. It feels difficult, and so the easier you can make it, the more likely you are to succeed. Another good place to start is with big items, physically big items, because getting rid of just a few physically big items can make a difference visually to a room and can make a difference to how easily you can move around. And it might be that you only need to get rid of a few of those to make a much bigger difference than if you start with tiny items. So I, when I started out, had a lot of empty cardboard boxes, and they weren't flattened or anything. They were full size empty cardboard boxes. And so obviously that took up a lot of space. And initially, when I first started really trying to de-hoard, a lot of it was just tearing up and throwing away these empty cardboard boxes. And it was an interesting process because I felt like I did nothing else for weeks but tear up empty cardboard boxes. I might be misremembering that a bit, but it was good in a number of ways. First of all, there was the odd cardboard box that I had a dilemma about. You know, when you get like a really good cardboard box that feels quite strong and sturdy and you feel like it could be useful, or it's a good size or something. But most of them were just standard like e-commerce shipping boxes. And I didn't feel too much anxiety at getting rid of them, partly because it became clearer and clearer that I had at least a billion. And so it wasn't like there was any sense of scarcity. But also, it was almost meditative. It's quite therapeutic to just tear stuff up. So I enjoyed that. And then also, if I got the urge to spend money, if I got the urge to go and do some online shopping, I found myself starting to think, oh, but then it would be like another box to get rid of. And I'm sick of the sight of boxes, and it would sometimes put me off making purchases. So it was actually a really good way to start in a number of ways. And also, because they were taking up a lot more space than a pile of letters or a shelf of books, it made a more striking visual difference more quickly. Seeing progress is a really good motivator, basically. You might also want to start in just the bits of your house you use the most. Don't worry so much about the attic or the spare room if you can't walk through your kitchen or you can't get to the dining room table. Again, this is a good way to make an actual difference in your life rather than a theoretical difference. If you notice that your day-to-day life is that bit easier because you can move around more easily or you can find things more easily, it's a really good motivator and it will help to keep you going. Again, when you're doing this, it's really important to not, it's important to narrow your vision temporarily and not say, okay, I'm going to do the bedroom, because there's probably a lot of stuff in there and it's probably an overwhelming prospect and there are too many decisions. If you can pick a really small spot in the bedroom, it will feel less overwhelming and you're more likely to be able to see a difference. At the end, breaking it down into kind of bite-sized chunks, really, it might be that you clear one square of space off your kitchen counter rather than saying, I'm going to work on the kitchen and do a bit here and a bit there and a bit somewhere else where you can't see any real progress. Even if you've narrowed down to a tiny spot, it doesn't all have to be done today. When you're starting, unless this is a crisis cleaning situation where you have an inspection coming up or some reason, you know, your landlord is threatening to evict you or something, in which case different things apply. I did a whole episode on kind of cleaning in an emergency, or de-hoarding in an emergency, more to the point. Again, I will link to it in the show notes. That is a difficult situation and a different situation. If that's not the case and you're not under external pressure, it's really important to pace yourself. Like, if you get in the zone and in the mood, do it, go for it. you know, take advantage of that mood hitting. But it's the marathon, not a sprint thing. You don't want to burn out within a week, because this is a huge and ongoing task, and tackling small areas is part of keeping it manageable. Lots and lots of small areas together make up a big area. So you're not making any less progress by focusing. You're just focusing. If you can have something to show for it in 4 hours' time, it will just really help. You'll have that sense of accomplishment, and that will keep you able to do a bit more this evening or able to do it again tomorrow. So that's kind of some ideas for physically where to start in your home. Pick big stuff, pick easy stuff, pick obvious rubbish, clear entryways and exits, and pick the things that bother you the most. They are all really good places to start. It's also important when you're starting to make a firm decision to stop bringing more stuff in. You can feel a bit like, well, I've cleared stuff. I deserve a reward. I earned a new pair of jeans because look at all this work I've done. I totally get that temptation. It's an issue I face a lot. And it's really important, even if you just see it as a temporary thing, say to yourself, okay, for 3 months, nothing is coming in except food or medicine or real emergency things. No clothes, no ornaments, no boxes, nothing. Because if you're filling up space as quickly as you clear it, you're just that snake eating its own tail. There are other ways to reward yourself. There are other things you can do to give yourself a bit of a boost. It's sabotaging your own progress if you're clearing with one hand and shopping or acquiring in other ways with the other. But as well as where physically to start, there are also kind of psychological places to start. In my experience, creating rules can help. So, as I've mentioned, one rule for me is out-of-date food goes. It means that every time I see, say I find a bag of pasta that went out of date last month and it's dried pasta, I could go, well, it's probably fine, it's dried pasta, it's not fresh, and it's only a month ago, should I keep it? Maybe it'll be all right. And I could have lots of dilemmas like that. Or this, whatever it is in a tin, so it's probably fine for a good 20 years. It's a lot easier to approach it with a really strict rule. If it went out of date yesterday, it goes. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if it's probably fine. I have a rule and I stick to it. Similarly, junk mail, when I can face dealing with that pile, junk mail goes. Projects I thought I would work on but haven't mostly go. I have a rule that I can keep projects if I'm definitely going to do them in the next 2 weeks, whether that is a crafty project or repairing some clothes that have got a tear or something like that. And if I'm definitely going to do them within 2 weeks, I can keep them. And I stick to that, or I try to. So that if 2 weeks later it isn't done, then that thing has to go. Whether it's the torn clothing going in the bin or the unopened craft project going to the charity shop. You might have rules about how old bank statements that you need to keep are. Now, some people, it differs in different countries, but in some places, for tax reasons, you have to keep bank statements for a certain amount of time. It's a lot easier to approach a pile of old bank statements with a rule that if it's more than 3 years old or 7 years old or whatever the rule is in your country, it just gets shredded. That's that. It's easier to go in with a rule than to make an assessment on each individual bank statement, which is absolutely mind-numbing and tiring and pointless. So other rules that you might have are, have I used this in the last 6 months or the last year? And if you haven't, you might have a rule that you get rid of it. You might have a rule that if clothes don't fit now, they go, regardless of whether you're dieting or gaining weight or whatever, doesn't matter. Some of these rules will sound to you as you listen really reasonable. Some of them will sound horrifying. And that's why, at least to start with, you need to come up with your own rules. Some people say, if I can replace it, it's something like within 20 days for less than $20, then it can go. That kind of thing. Don't spend months coming up with a set of really complex rules as an excuse to not make any progress. That's not what this is, or it's not what it should be. But it can really help to streamline the process. I did a whole episode on this, about having systems, using systems, I think I called it. I will link to it at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Pick a few to start and see if, well, it will help to streamline your process. And be willing to make those rules stricter in time, not necessarily when you start, but it might be that when you start, your rule is, if my clothes are two sizes in the wrong direction, I'll get rid of them. And then in time, you feel able to tighten that up to if they don't currently fit. But having some kind of streamlined system like that is really helpful. And don't underestimate how disabling being overwhelmed is. I realized I was putting off planning this episode, and I asked myself why, and realized it was because the very idea of trying to tackle where to start was quite overwhelming. And once I established that that was what was holding me back, I was able to break it down into smaller pieces, into smaller chunks, and to say, okay, well, if I'm dealing with overwhelm, I know that I'm very familiar with overwhelm. I have tactics for this. It involves taking a step back, breaking it down, seeing, you know, am I expecting too much of myself? Am I trying to be perfect? All of these things. So if you're looking around yourself as you listen and thinking, this is just too much, it's impossible, I do not know how to handle this, that's where using things like having rules, like starting with the easy stuff, really helps. And it's also where breaking it down into smaller chunks is invaluable. Yes, tackling your hoard is really difficult. It's really difficult. But tackling one kitchen drawer, or tackling your porch, or a bit of your porch, or your bathroom, one shelf in your bathroom, that is all less overwhelming, less intimidating to somebody who is not used to tackling any of it. So if you're overthinking it, if you're shutting down because you're overwhelmed, think about shrinking it and really focusing on one bit. Laser focus. Also, remind yourself of why you want to do it. The reason you're listening to an episode on where to start with dehoarding is because something in you wants to start dehoarding. So ask yourself why that is. Maybe make a list. Maybe keep it on your phone. Maybe stick it to your wall to remind yourself of the reasons. And there might be one, there might be 20. Write them all down. Get them out of your head and onto paper or onto the notes app on your phone. It might be things like, I want to feel safer if there's a medical emergency. It might be, I want to not feel fear when somebody knocks at the door. It might be, I want to get the plumbing fixed in my bathroom. There can be any number of reasons you want to tackle your hoard. And if you have an easy to access reminder of those things, then in those moments where you're thinking, this is too much, I can't do it, just look through that list again and remind yourself of why it's important to you. Because it is important to you. It might also be important to other people, especially if you live with a partner or if you live with children or if you live with a parent or with housemates or anything. So remind yourself of why you want to do it. And also reassure yourself that it's not all awful. One thing to remember is that the more you do it, the easier it gets. And that's not to say it becomes 100% easy, because you can be really experienced at it, but then come across the one kind of category that you find impossible to deal with, which might be books, it might be clothes, it might be your kids' paintings, it could be a lot of things. But the day-to-day, taking, you know, the really difficult stuff into account, but as part of a much bigger picture, the day-to-day practice of picking something up, making a decision and sticking to that decision gets easier as it gets more familiar. And that's not to say it's a pure graph going down in difficulty. There are bumps up and there are bumps down. But just reassure yourself that if your first hour of doing it feels unbearable, your 20th hour of it probably won't. And also ask yourself, are you able to ask for help? And there's two main avenues of this. One is informal and one is formal. So asking for help informally might be asking a parent to help you out. It might be asking your friends to help you out, or your sister, or whoever, somebody in your church, your mosque, your synagogue. It could be anybody informally that you feel you could trust and that you feel would be helpful and practical in this situation. Some people, like me, currently find that impossible. The shame is so great that I just cannot. I can't. So if you are also in that situation, I fully relate. But some of you aren't in that situation, and you do have people who maybe already know that you hoard, or maybe don't know, but you feel confident or trustworthy. Think about asking them for help, whether that is physical help in coming round and helping you sort, or whether it's a phone call every evening to check in on how you're doing, or somebody that you can just offload to once a week. I meant psychologically, but no, probably not physically. You don't want to offload your stuff for somebody else to deal with. The only thing to bear in mind with this, with asking for informal help, is not to ask people who have been negatively impacted by your hoard already. Now, I'm thinking of if you have, say, adult children, and those children grow up in a hoard. I know enough about that from the Children of Hoarders group online, from interviewing Elizabeth Nelson early on in this podcast, again, link in the show notes, that growing up in a hoarded home is incredibly damaging and difficult. And we can't shy away from the fact that if we have children and they're living in a hoard, that is, it's really difficult for them. And it's not generally appropriate to then ask those people to help you fix it in the same way as if your parent is somebody who abuses alcohol. Then if you as an adult child have managed to break free from that, it's not appropriate for you to be asked to be the one to fix it. And in the same way, we can't expect children of hoarders to be the ones to come in and rescue their parents. That's too much to ask of somebody who's been damaged by this situation. Children is the people I'm thinking of, but it may be other people. I suspect you will know as you're listening if you have people who you know that your hoard has damaged in some way. They are probably not the people to ask for help. But there's also formal help, and that usually comes in the form of a therapist, a psychotherapist, or a professional organiser of some kind, or maybe like a charity that works with people who hoard. And there's definite value in those options, especially if you can get a therapist with experience of working with hoarders. And similarly, if you're getting a professional organiser, the same. You know, if you can get somebody with experience rather than somebody who normally comes in and, you know, makes an already neat closet neater. If you get somebody who has experience of really digging into a hoard as somebody, that can be really valuable. In both cases, whether you're looking at therapists or personal organisers, as well as them having experience, look at like their qualifications, because in the UK at least, you can call yourself a counsellor or a therapist with no training, with no anything. It's not a protected title. Like you can't call yourself a doctor if you're not a doctor, but you can call yourself a therapist. So look for things like professional memberships, because in order to be a member of, say, the British Association of Counsellors and Psychotherapists, I think you have to have trained with an accredited course. Similarly with professional organisers, anybody can call themselves a professional organiser. I could call myself a professional organiser and that would be obscene. I am the least qualified person. I have no skills in that area. And yet I could put a website up tomorrow, call myself that and start getting clients. So I doubt there are fully accredited courses in that way with personal organisers, but maybe look for people who talk at industry conferences or who are well respected in the industry, just to protect yourself, whether it's a therapist or a professional organiser. You need this to be somebody who helps you, not somebody who makes things worse, not somebody who you spend a lot of money on and it's pointless. But if you feel like having professional help come in physically or come in psychologically, if you feel that that would help you to get started and help you to keep going, it's definitely worth considering. There is a lot to be said for it. I have an episode on different types of therapy for hoarding. I have an episode specifically on CBT, one on acceptance and commitment therapy, and one on therapy for OCD. So have a listen to those. Do a bit of research into what has research behind it and see which one feels right. It might be online therapy. It might be in person. It might be you go to their office. It might be they come to your home. Look into the different options. And if you can access that and you feel like it will be valuable, it probably will be valuable. And reward yourself. Whether you manage to throw away one thing in a 2-hour session or 100 things, give yourself a little reward. Do not go shopping. That is not what I'm talking about. But have a slice of cake, have a nice cup of tea, phone your best friend, go for a walk in the park, something nice that recognises that you've done something really hard and you should be really proud of yourself, and that it's the start of what will ultimately, hopefully, be a really, really positive outcome. Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to be a de-hoarding darling. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So my top tip this week is a mini clip from the Creative Women International podcast. And it's about imposter syndrome and confidence. And it applies to so many things, whether that's your work or your parenting or whatever roles you take on in life, but it also applies to things like de-hoarding. Have a listen.
You will feel imposter syndrome again. And we have this thing in our culture where, get over the fear and you can do this. Well, the fear never goes away. And actually, I would be really worried if it wasn't there, because it would tell me that you weren't challenging yourself. You weren't pushing yourself to another level. So actually, the fear is your friend. I know it doesn't feel like it in the moment, but actually it's there to say, hey, I'm trying to keep you safe. And you can say, that's great, but actually, I really, really want this thing I'm aiming for, and you're not helping me at the moment, and I'm going to park you to the side, and I'm going to be feeling afraid, but I'm going to take the next step.
So I thought that was a really important point. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at ThatHoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with ThatHoarder. To find out more about how you can support this podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to this podcast, so you make sure you don't miss any future episodes.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People, on Broadway through June 16th only.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to The Future Forecast, a podcast where we explore the intersection between business, technology, and entertainment. My name is Boye Akolade, and I'm the co-founder and president of The Future Party, which is a community-based media company for creative professionals. We have a daily newsletter about culture and technology, and we also host a ton of different community events around the country. At The Future Party, we wanted to create this show where my co-host Chris Sautel and I are able to talk about some of the week's most interesting stories and dissect them from the perspective of two business owners with ties to the tech and entertainment industries. Future Forecast is brought to you by Wheelhouse DNA and Acast. New episodes will be released every Thursday. Check them out wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.